This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Franz. It stinks.
What is going on? What is going on?
Episode 27, submission number 743, The Bud Bowl. The Bud Bowl was a series of Super Bowl commercials by Anheuser-Busch for the Super Bowls between 1989 and 1997.
And they were groundbreaking.
Yes.
Oh, my. I have so many good memories of this. Now, not necessarily because I was a drinker back when it first started, but I don't know about you guys. My cousin and I, probably starting around Bud Bowl 3, we actually wagered on the game. On the Bud Bowl, not the Super Bowl, the Bud Bowl. And I'm not kidding. He must have had inside information because I don't think I ever beat him. I think he always won. Now, there's small wagers, you know, like $1, $5. I mean, he would have been all of probably about 13, 14 when Bud Bowl started. And I would have been probably about a year older than him. So it was all in jest, but he won like every year, and that just irritated me. I'm going to get you next year, and not even joking. I never won. So I think he had some inside information.
He knew somebody at the Anheuser-Busch Corporation, and he told him he got the inside scoop on who won the game.
Yeah, he knew this as a 14-year-old. What is he doing knowing this stuff as a 14-year-old back then?
You know what? No judgment. But if he was going to ask somebody, I know who he would ask about the Bud Bowl. A man by the name of Grant Pace was working at Darcy Massius Benton and Bowles in 1989. He developed the Battle of the Bottles as a one-off during that year's Super Bowl. But here's the thing. Anheuser-Busch executives loved it so much, and it really drummed up sales. So, they decided to make it an ongoing thing.
Yes.
Yeah, and in case you don't know, this wasn't shown like one commercial during the Super Bowl. It was like a continuous thing. Okay, at the end of the first quarter, they show like the first quarter of the Bud Bowl. At halftime, they show not just the second quarter highlights, but also they would have a halftime show included as well. So this would be like five or six ads over the course of the Super Bowl, which kept you interested. How is the Bud Bowl going to end? These stupid fake beer bottles.
And it's amazing because this was designed to keep people's interest in the game, because usually at that time, the Super Bowls were basically a very boring game. However, it happened to be that in the first Bud Bowl in 1989, the Super Bowl that year actually turned out to be one of the most exciting Super Bowls of all time between the San Francisco 49ers and Cincinnati Bengals. That was the famous Super Bowl where Joe Montana led the game-winning drive with a minute left, and he spotted John Candy in the stands eating popcorn.
So, as Greg said, yeah, a lot of the Super Bowls in recent history at that point were blowouts. You had the Bears absolutely demolishing the Patriots. Oh, the Patriots lost for once. Tee-hee-hee. They got demolished in 86. And in 1988, the Redskins absolutely trounced the Denver Broncos. And I say this as a Browns fan. The Denver Broncos deserve to get trounced in that game. John Elway got two middle fingers up for you.
Is that the year the Ernest Biner fumble happened in 88?
You just like reopening the wounds. Yeah, that was the fumble by Ernest Biner, and that was the year after the drive. And the good thing is I've met Ernest Biner, and he's like totally over it. Cleveland's totally over it. I mean, stuff happens. Okay. He actually wrote a book about it. It was basically like a giant apology. Not necessarily an apology. It was biographical, but there was a big part of the book which was like, you know, I'm sorry if I let Cleveland down. You know, will you forgive me? And he's a great guy. He's actually replied to me a couple of times on social media. Total class act. And, I mean, maybe a fringe Hall of Famer. But he definitely has the numbers, and he's a class act too. So, yeah, thank you, Greg, for reminding me about Denver beating the Browns in 87 and 88.
So the first Bud Bowl was very, very hyped. It was hyped in, like, supermarkets. There was a big hype of ads leading up to it. And the guy who did the narration for the ads is actually somebody who we'll be talking about sometime later this year, the legendary late ABC promo announcer, Ernie Anderson.
Mm. Yeah, so you have Ernie Anderson as your announcer, and already you're getting hyped because, again, this is Bud Bowl. This is not just any contest. This is Bud Bowl.
This time, it's for real.
It's for real.
You have Busch Stadium, of course. Why not? Because Anheuser-Busch is located in St. Louis. And Mike, wouldn't this have been around the time the Cardinals had already left for Phoenix?
The St. Louis Cardinals had actually moved to Phoenix that previous year. They were in St. Louis up until 87. Then they moved to Phoenix in 88. So this is right after they moved.
Yes, so we have that. And also, announced in the game, we have beer-bottled versions of Bob Costas and Paul McGuire, because obviously the Super Bowl that year, 1989, was on NBC.
Yeah. The inaugural Bud Bowl was billed as Thunder and Lightning Showdown between two beers with contrasting styles. Bud, which boasted the vaunted Beechwood backs, favored a rushing attack, while Bud Light's pass first, ask questions later attack was led by a QB with Tom Brady-like numbers. 49 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
I wonder if he got help from a beer-bottled version of Alex Guerrero.
Oh.
The back-and-forth game featured all sorts of excitement. Bud Light executed a flea flicker to perfection, while Bud's appliance of defiance, the freezer, gave Bud Light defenders headaches all night.
And folks, the freezer, of course, if you don't know, was a reference to Chicago Bears legend William Perry, who famously scored a touchdown in Super Bowl 20. Of course, William Perry was still around in the league at this point in 1989. He was not really the cultural sensation he was back in 1985. He would still be on the Bears until 1992, but his impact was felt even in this inaugural Bud Bowl.
No, it was his brother at the time that was making the impact, Michael Dean Perry.
Damn.
Again, my Browns influence, but continue.
Yeah. You know, this was... Remember, this was back in 1989, I want to say a year or two after, fun fact, William Refrigerator Perry was a Joe.
And not only that.
Knowing is half the battle.
And not only that, but William Perry was also in future entry WrestleMania 2 in the WWF NFL Battle Royal in Chicago.
So, yeah, he had work.
Oh, yeah. Just ask Big John Studd.
No, okay, he had a work. Huh?
Oh, I got it. Well, while the 49ers and the Bengals were in a tight contest to see who would win, the Bud Bowl was tied up all at 24, and it fell on the shoulders of one man for Budweiser, their kicker, Budski.
Bud Budski, the 7-ounce nip bottle place kicker. He wobbled onto the field to attempt a 42-yard field goal. The kick bounced off the crossbar and left upright before falling through, sending the boozed-up crowd of Bud beer cans into a frenzy, or a fizzy frenzy. The boost up Bud cans into a fizzy frenzy. Final score, Budweiser 27, Bud Light 24.
And of course, there's a teaser from one of the Bud Light players saying, wait till next year. Of course, meaning that we will get more Bud Ball greatness to come.
Yeah, thank heavens the whole series didn't flop, or else that's a horrible prediction.
That would be a really bad party foul.
Oh, very bad. But there are actually, believe it or not, two alternate endings.
What?
And both of these would have been classic. The first one actually had the ending of the Bud Bowl being cut away to the movie Heidi in reference to the Heidi game back in the 60s. That would have been hilarious.
And it would have made sense because guess what network it was on?
It was on NBC. There you go.
NBC, and of course, NBC ruins everything. Apologies to Adam Conover.
And a second alternate ending was an incident where two of the players were actually picked up by a man from the fridge, abruptly ending the game as a 24-24 tie.
Basically, Tommy was falling the entire spectacle.
While the Bud cans of Bob Costas and Paul McGuire are just in a frenzy saying, what are we going to do? Call the commissioner. Call somebody.
Leading up to this game, there was a video press kit, which you can actually find on YouTube. And Greg was daring enough to watch it, and he's got some stuff to say about that. Greg?
Yes, I have thoughts.
Yeah, so we have a kit. And it teases Bud Ball 1. You have the Ernie Anderson narration. And you have Dick Enberg introducing the Bud Ball and explaining what this is going to be. And then you get into a weird segment with Chris Berman and Roy Firestone, like, hyping the Bud Ball. But also you get Roy Firestone doing weird impersonations of Keith Jackson. And then he does an interview with a player from Budweiser and Bud Light as Howard Cosell?
That makes absolutely no sense. No, seriously, no. That makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, in fact, we'll play a clip of that interview right here.
Hello again, everybody. With me today via satellite, two quarterbacks of the opposing teams. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time to join us today.
Good to be here, Howard.
Yeah, our pleasure, Howard.
All right. Quite directly. Tell me, this game, this clash of the titans, this battle of the beverages, this legendary matchup of the libations will be watched by some 100 million viewers. Are you feeling the inevitable onset of the pre-confrontational butterflies?
Nah.
We just want to kick some bud.
Hey, lighten up.
Hey, you lighten up.
All right, all right. Your respective offenses are asymmetrically opposed. In point of fact, do you foresee any radical readjustments to account for these counteractive approaches?
I never took a good arithmetic. I have no idea.
Howard, we have no idea what you just said.
Ever.
Pardon my pontification. Perhaps I can at least proffer a prediction from either of you gentlemen.
Howard, look, these are two strong teams, and it should be neck and neck.
Yeah, Howard, you're going to expect a real brouhaha, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, and good luck.
Good night, Howard.
Yeah, good night, Howard. See you at the Bud Bowl.
Yeah, Chico, it absolutely makes no sense. Why is Roy Firestone doing an impersonation of Howard Cosell? I bet he probably thinks, well, it's just probably going to be like 100 people are going to watch this on a VHS tape. It's not like anybody in 30 years is going to watch this anytime they want.
Yeah, it's not like anybody's going to make a podcast where they talk about all the Bud Bowl games.
Well, I will justify him being in that. Roy Firestone was the great interviewer at ESPN at the time. Before they had all the talk shows. Bud Bowl 2.
Yeah, so it's been a year.
After a year of waiting. After months of hype. It's time to rock and roll. Later today on CBS.
Yeah, folks, that's probably the only time in his distinguished career that Ernie Anderson ever said the letters on voice recording of CBS.
I might actually fight that, because when Ernie Anderson started it here in Cleveland, he was on the CBS affiliate.
Yeah, but I mean, does any of
nationwide sense, I agree with you, yes.
Yeah, there you go. So let's go to the frozen tundra of Busch Stadium, which right now would be in St. Louis, but back in 1990, who knows where it is? Budweiser overcame a gritty performance by Butt-like quarterback Bud Wade Joe and scored the winning touchdown as time expired when an offensive player advanced a fumble, which, by the way, is illegal in NFL rules. And according to the Chicago Sun-Times, Anheuser-Busch received hundreds of telephone calls about the play over the course of the next week, prompting the St. Louis-based brewery to respond thusly. In the National Football League, of course, the offensive team cannot advance a fumble in the final 2 minutes of a game unless the ball is recovered by the same player who fumbled it. However, no such rule exists in the BFL, the Budweiser Football League.
That's a good way to justify it. In the NFL, you can't do it, but in our league, you can.
Isn't that how the XFL started?
That's sort of where I was going to go next. But again, that's another entry for another day.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thing, the Bud Light coach was an impersonation of Bear Bryant.
Boy, that's a little dated.
Just a little bit.
So with Bud Bowl 2, now that the Super Bowl is on CBS this year in Super Bowl 24, which, by the way, unlike the previous year, was a very terrible game. That was the 49ers 55-10 blowout of the Broncos.
Yep.
But you have, for Bud Bowl 2, the announcers this time are beer-bottled versions of Brent Musburger and Terry Bradshaw.
Because this game would be on CBS.
So it's interesting to note that this would be, ironically, Super Bowl 24 would be one of Brent Musburger's final assignments for CBS, because later, of course, in the year, he'd be fired during the middle of the Final Four that year, and of course he would later go on that year to go to ABC and ESPN, where he remained until he retired recently.
And of all days, April 1st.
April Fool's Day, he was fired. Shame.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So we also see the debut of Budweiser's featured backs, Billy and Bobby Bud from Texas. And if I'm and in Bud Bowl 2, one of the things is they bring back the freezer. Bud Light tries to stop the freezer with the washer, the dryer, but that's not all. They brought him too. They brought the kitchen sink to try to stop the freezer, but the freezer works a fake handoff to Bobby Bud, who goes to the washer, the dryer, and the kitchen sink for a touchdown.
And there's even a line from that Bud Bowl. Folks, they're throwing everything at him, but no, he's here too. The kitchen sink.
But that's not all.
But also, I should note, the end of Bud Bowl 2, the freezer is asked how he feels by beer bottle Terry Bradshaw about winning back-to-back titles. And there's the debut of what would go on to be the Budweiser catchphrase, nothing beats a Bud.
Interesting how that works out, isn't it?
And the end result of the Bud Bowl that year was Budweiser narrowly beat Bud Light 36-34. Hey, have you noticed that all of the games were relatively close? There was never a blowout in this series? I wonder why.
Drama. Drama, drama, drama. All the drama. But it looks, but I'm looking at the press kit for Bud Bowl 2. By the way, Freezer, he's a big boy. Yeah. It looks like they recycled some of the graphics from Bud Bowl 1, obviously. But interesting fact. Do you know how much? Do you know how long it takes to make 3 seconds worth of film?
Oh no, I don't.
Well, stop animation. It must take some time. 3 seconds. So that would be probably 90 frames. I'm guessing that would probably take minimum probably like 3 or 4 hours.
Try 8.
Ow. Ow, ow, ow.
Yeah.
People were racking up overtime there. Dang.
I mean, it's no Snow White in 1937, but then again, what is?
So now we get into the third Bud Ball, Bud Ball 3. So in the lead up to this Bud Ball, the Bud Light quarterback, Budway Joe, yeah, Budway Joe, very clever, huh? He suffers a season-ending injury, and what does Bud Light do to replace him? They replace him with their top draft choice, Bud Dry. Hey, folks, you remember Bud Dry?
I remember it. Never had it, but I remember it.
Same here.
That'll be in someone's spinoff podcast. It was a thing at the brewery. That'll probably be hosted by my dad.
Bud Bowl 3 would go down to be one of the greatest Bud Bowls of all time. Bud Light opens up a big first quarter lead on Bud, but the King of Beers roars back behind Billy Bud and Bobby Bud. Second half touchdown from the freezer, a.k.a. the Appliance of Defiance, ties the game. Bud Light gets a field goal to take a 17-14 lead. But a late touchdown from Budweiser's grabs gives Bud a 4-point lead with just seconds to go. Then Bud Light returns the kickoff for the touchdown, going Cal style. In fact, it was not seen since the big game back in 1982, also known worldwide as the play. Final score, Bud Light 23, Budweiser 21. Beer bottle versions of Keith Jacks.
No.
Wait, they weren't beer bottle versions?
No, they got the actual Keith Jackson and Don Meredith for this version of the Bud Ball. Because, of course, as we know, the Bud Ball this year was in conjunction with the Super Bowl, which was on ABC, which, of course, would be the Giants-Bills Super Bowl. And for those folks in Buffalo, I don't want to relive that pain for you. So you're welcome.
And I think I can speak for Mike and Greg when I say, whoa, Nelly!
Oh, yeah. It was a good game on the field, both for the Super Bowl and the Bud Bowl that year. Two classics.
That was Super Bowl 25, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was Super Bowl 25, yeah. So, I mean, that was probably, I would say, one of the best in history, if not the best.
Yeah, it's like Super Bowl 25, the Super Bowl to end all Super Bowls.
And that's just talking about the game itself, not even including the national anthem from Whitney Houston, which is probably the best rendition ever.
Yep.
But also during the game, during the commercials with the Bud, you had Bud Ball updates from Chris Berman telling you what happened. And of course, my favorite is, Chico, you talked about the touchdown by Grabs. It's a Hail Mary pass, and Chris Berman says it's up for grabs, and Grabs has it! And it's the beer bottle, the beer bottle using his funnel to go all the way up and grab the ball. So, yeah. So Bud Light ends Budweiser's streak of 2 Bud Balls in a row, and then we get...
Before you get to the next game, this is the line of the night. Bud laterals to Bud. Bud pitches to Bud. Bud flips it to Ralph. Ralph?
But did the game end in a ridiculous fashion? Yes. A Bud Light bottle named Ralph scored the game-winning touchdown while holding a sousaphone.
What?
The band was on the field.
Can you imagine if this year's Super Bowl ended in wacky fashion, guys? Like, say, Travis Kelce scores the winning touchdown, and somehow the football is trapped in a saxophone.
Who would bring a saxophone to a Super Bowl?
Maybe at least a Simpson. I don't know. I mean, it, I mean, the game is on Fox this year.
Well, clearly they wanted to get to the Masked Singer on time. Yeah, that's not going to happen, by the way. Anyway, as good as Bud Bowl 3 was, Bud Bowl 4 was infinitely not.
Yeah. So instead of showing Bud bottles, we had Chris Berman narrating one fan's request to retrieve Bud Bowl sweepstakes ticket that his girlfriend had mistakenly thrown away, because fans in this Bud Bowl had a chance to win up to $1 million. The final score of the Bud Bowl matched the score on their game cards, which were a staple of the later Bud Bowls. So we have actually the boyfriend is played by David Bowie, who you would best know as Weird Al's best friend in UHF. He's the guy in the Chicago Cubs hat, by the way, in UHF.
Yeah, yes, we know who David Bowie is.
So after a predictably disastrous turn of events that involves a trash can, a police car, and a pigeon, the pitiful hero manages to retrieve his ticket and arrives home just in time to catch the final score of the Bud Bowl. And lo and behold, oh my God, can you believe this? He was a winner. But after he put the ticket down to celebrate with an ice-cold Budweiser and began recounting his stupid story to some of his friends, it then went to a dog who wandered into the room and, well, you can guess what happens after that.
Dogs do what dogs do.
And Rover didn't see Monday morning after that.
So the final score of Bud Bowl 4, Budweiser wins its third Bud Bowl in 4 years, winning 27-24. And the less said about Bud Bowl 4, the better. Now we get to Bud Bowl 5, where the Budweiser people were probably like, oh, crap, people really must like those beer bottles. Okay, let's bring the beer bottles back. But not only did they bring the beer bottles back, they had the beer bottles in CG. And not only did they bring the beer bottles back in CG, they had coaches for Bud Bowl 5.
Wait, that's not the weird bit. The coaches were Joe Namath and, for reasons known only to Anheuser-Busch, Corbin Burnson.
Well, the Super Bowl would have been in 1983 that year, and the Super Bowl would have been on NBC, and L.A. Law would have still been on the air in 1983, so it would make perfect sense to have Corbin Burnson be a coach for the Bud Bowl.
Hashtag corporate synergy.
Yeah. So, Bud is out to a commanding 35-7 lead. Corbin Burnson decides to call on his secret weapon. It isn't the fridge. It isn't the freezer. It's not the washer or the dryer. It's not the dog from Bud Bowl 4, which was probably put down afterwards. No, it was the Illuminator. Now, you're probably asking to yourself, what was the Illuminator?
What is the Illuminator?
A beer truck that turns Transformer style into their secret weapon.
Whoa!
The Illuminator scores 24 straight, and he runs in for the game-winning score. However, and this is where you just have to go, again, calling back from the previous episode of this podcast, play the clip, Mike.
What is going on? What is going on?
A claw from the Bud blimp comes down and knocks the ball out of his hands. Bud recovers on the one and wins 35-31. Cue Joe Namath shaking his fist at the blimp. That was just, oh my goodness, that was just, I thought I have seen everything in these commercials up to this point.
For some reason, I'm getting like a Scooby-Doo vibe. I see Joe Namath looking at the blimp. If it wasn't for you darn blimps, I would have won!
But remember, Joe Namath was the coach of the Budweiser, so he's probably shaking his fist in triumph or something.
Yeah, he's probably very happy that they'd survive this. Because let's be honest, though, I gotta be honest, even though I appreciate Joe Namath being from New York and everything, I gotta say, though, it is kind of a tainted victory to have a claw come into the air and stop the Illuminator. It was kind of like the Pete Carroll play call of having Russell Wilson pass on second and goal with Marshawn Lynch at the one.
No.
Too soon, man. Too soon.
We should also add the announcers for this game were Ahmad Rashad, and maybe a name you're not familiar with, but she had a bit of popularity back in the day. Karen Duffy, who was an MTV VJ.
Yes.
Wow.
And of course, this would be a year before Karen Duffy would have her most famous role, in my opinion, in the 1994 Disney movie Blank Check. All right, so now we head into Bud Bowl 6. And this time, I think for the coaching aspect in Bud Bowl 6, they really upped up their game with this. For Budweiser, you have Mike Ditka. And for Bud Light, you have Bum Phillips.
Wow.
And we're just stunned.
I'm looking at Bud Phillips right now. He is stone-faced.
Yeah, that's exactly how he was back in the day with the Oilers and the Saints. Just serious with his cowboy hat and everything.
Yep, and in the studio, calling the action, Marv Albert.
Yes! After the game, I'm going to bite someone's back! Yes!
Oh, jeez.
Nah, boy. Bud Light took an early lead on a naked reverse after its quarterback shed his label at the line of scrimmage. Bud countered with a kickoff return for a touchdown by the Basher, a 24-ounce can of aluminum dominance, who was penalized for excessive celebration and then ejected for cursing at the referee. Yes, this is how big things have gone for the Bud Bowl. They had a can on the field.
This is how serious they were now in the Bud Bowl. They were integrating more and more stuff for the Bud Bowl. They brought cans into it as well as bottles.
Okay, at the half, it's 14-7, and in the third, Bud Light's unnamed quarterback catches his own pass. He got his own. Did he just Russell Wilson that pass? Runs in the ball for the score.
So this was basically the Bud Bowl equivalent of the Philly Special.
From 1994.
Oh, but then then we have a windstorm coming in the second half.
Are you kidding me?
What? I mean, come on, again.
What is going on? What is going on?
Budweiser blips pick up the stadium and drop the entire game into a bar. A fan reaches onto the field, grabs a Bud defensive back, freeing Bud Light for a game-winning touchdown. And in perhaps the most lopsided Bud Bowl victory ever, because they're all very close, Bud Light wins 20-14.
Wow, so Bum Phillips finally gets off the schneid and wins a big game. Good for him!
And to quote Marv Albert, I don't know where this game is headed, but this is what I call a beer run.
But guys, the best part of Bud Bowl 6 was when the Basher burst through the wall, Kool-Aid Man style, and berated Marv Albert.
I am looking at the animated GIF of that right now. It is classic.
The Basher is the hero we needed. Somebody to bash Marv Albert.
He probably did a lot of good in 1994, the Basher, and God bless him. So after the Bud Bowl, we get into a comment from syndicated sports humor columnist and someone I think, Mike, you and I know very well from reading over the years, Mr. Norman Chad.
Oh, I know that guy.
Very, very funny and very respected, yes.
Okay, so Norman Chad wrote, about the Bud Bowl in 1984. My biggest problem with the whole Bud Bowl thing is that they never have any good teams playing. I mean, if the Anheuser-Busch bigwigs had any brass at all, they'd get, say, Heineken and Samuel Adams every once in a while. Heck, Bud Light's like Notre Dame. It doesn't matter what their record is. They're ball bound.
Yeah, not wrong.
Nope.
But, of course, this would kind of be the last year that they would kind of go with this format, because now we go into the unmemorable Bud Bowls, where it ends with a whimper.
Would you say this is worse than Bud Bowl 4?
I would say this is worse than Bud Bowl 4. So they give us in Bud Bowl 7 in 1995, their ad campaign at the time, which was a bunch of castaways on an island named Iggy, Biff, and Frank, watching Bud Bowl 7 unfold on a desert island. Here's a question. They're on a desert island, but they have a working TV. How do they get electricity on the island?
Coconuts. Haven't you ever seen Gilligan's Island?
Exactly. How did Gilligan and all the castaways stay stranded on that island for so long? Even though they had communication, they had CB radios or radios of some sort, they were still stuck on that island and never could get off.
Okay, so with Bud trailing late in the game, Iggy was somehow transported off the island and into the game, where he caught a pass and began rumbling toward the end zone. And 80 yards later, in a dreamlike montage of press clippings and cereal boxes commemorating his newfound celebrity, Iggy gave Budweiser its fifth Bud Bowl win.
That game made absolutely no sense.
Yeah, this is the jumping the shark moment.
All right, let me look at the timeline here. Bud Bowl 6 was in 1994, obviously one of their best showings. And then a year later, you have Bud Bowl 7, which was... What kind of F-star-star-star-ery is this?
It was Bud trying to combine one of their existing commercial franchises in terms of the people stranded on the desert island with the one franchise that every year for the Super Bowl, for at least the last, at that point, 6 years, was a rousing success. And it turned into a giant mess. I mean, the only way this could have been worse, and this was probably around that time, maybe a little bit later, is if they had the Budweiser frog somehow morph into the game.
Oh, boy. Don't give anybody any ideas.
I'm sorry.
You could tell that Budweiser was really straining for ideas at the end of that one.
So now we get into Bud Bowl 8 Asterix. Because I know in the research that we're using in the Mental Frost article that says that there was no Bud Bowl, but doing research, there was actually a Bud Bowl 8. But it wasn't really anything special. It was just a collection of commercials with some guy in a football helmet in first-person mode. And the gimmick for that Bud Bowl was like kind of similar to Bud Bowl 4, where you had like a ticket. You scratched it off, and it revealed what the winning play was. And if you had the winning play for that year's Bud Bowl, you'd win like $1 million.
And for the record, the winning play was naked reverse. Winning Man. Play, naked reverse.
So that's all we have to say about Bud Bowl 8. And it should be noted that that year's Super Bowl was the 96 one, with the Steelers and Cowboys, and that actually was an exciting Super Bowl. The Larry Brown Super Bowl with the winning interception off Neil O'Donnell. And the less said about Neil O'Donnell, the better.
So that leads us to what would be the final Bud Bowl telecast. It would be unofficially Bud Bowl 9, because it's not mentioned anywhere near in the commercial. In fact, it's only one spot long. It stars Howie Long and Ronnie Lott, because the Super Bowl was on Fox that year.
the first Super Bowl on Fox, as a matter of fact.
Yep. And it was just people in a bar watching the game. They open the fridge. Guess what's happening? Bud Bowl 9. Guy gets thrown out of the bar, and guess who he meets? A crocodile. Not the frogs. A crocodile. And the final score, like it matters, was 27-24. Budweiser wins its sixth Bud Bowl.
That ad ended with the fan who was removed from the bar. When he got to the alligator, he said a phrase which was actually probably a little popular back in the day on Bud ads. I love you, man!
And that, my friends, was the history of the Bud Bowl. It left a great impact on television and the Super Bowl. It certainly made for an exciting game in years where the Super Bowl was terrible. Guys, the Bud Bowl has its place in history in our hearts, and it was a thing on TV.
It was a very refreshing thing on TV.
It was a great thing on TV that we remember from our respective childhoods, or even in my case and Chico's case, our teenage years.
I'll say this. This year's Super Bowl, I don't think Patrick Mahomes, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think they can go toe-to-toe with Budway Joe or the Freezer or the Basher or
The Illuminator.
Yeah. Can you imagine if somehow Kyle Shanahan during the middle of the Super Bowl decided, you know what, we're Patrick Mahomes, he's running 21 points on us. You know what? We gotta go with this giant beer can to help us win the Super Bowl.
I'd pay to see that happen.
I would pay to see a transforming truck. Because if there's anything I like, it's giant truck mecha. Google it, kids.
And I'm sure if the Bud Bowl was around today, you'd probably have some reference a couple of years ago to the Super Bowl blackout in New Orleans, probably, or some other stuff.
Oh, you'd probably have the reference to what Chico said earlier, the Russell Wilson throw on the 1 yard line instead of handing the ball to Marshawn Lynch. Oh, yeah, there would be all sorts of references to Super Bowl histories of the past.
Or the Philly special.
Or the Philly special, or like you said, the lights going out, or Scott Norwood being wide right.
Or a halftime show complete with Naked Express.
Or you could have Kevin Dyson just narrowly missing the goal line. Oh, yeah, there's so many historic references that you could utilize in new ads like that, but alas.
Oh, how about this? Katy Perry singing with two Clydesdales, and the one on the left is all out of whack.
Oh, my gosh!
Horse!
I would actually pay to see that.
Yeah, I think the Puppy Bowl in modern days kind of become our new replacement for the Bud Bowl.
Or in Mike's case, it would be the Kitty Bowl.
Oh, all those bowls. I love watching both of them. Well, this was a nice little retrospective of Bud Bowl.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placeofnation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceofNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Episode 28, Submission 113, Cheap, Cheap, Cheap. Cheap, Cheap, Cheap aired on Channel 4 in the United Kingdom from August 14th to September 22nd of 2017 for a total of 30 episodes. Greg, do you remember back on episode one?
Yes.
Yeah, do you remember how we opened that episode? It's like it just happened a couple of days ago. Greg, you got your Hollywood Squares in my match game.
Mike, you got my match game in my Hollywood Squares.
Two great tastes that taste great together. Greg, you got your game show in my sitcom.
Mike, you got your sitcom in my game show.
It's Miller Boyette meets Mark Goodson. Is it a game show? Is it a sitcom? ¿Por qué no los dos? In case you haven't noticed, we're probably going to imagine that there are laugh tracks and other audience cues, because Cheap, Cheap, Cheap is not your ordinary game show. For one, it takes place in, I don't even want to call it a supermarket. What is this? It's
a general store.
It's like the half of the Cracker Barrel that you don't eat at.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and, it's hosted by Noel Edmonds, and if you don't know who Noel Edmonds is, the best way to equate him for as an American equivalent would be probably Dick Clark or maybe Ryan Seacrest if he continues for another 10 or 15 years.
Or you could just go back to the Doctor Who Dimensions in Time episode of this podcast.
You could.
Yeah.
But we didn't really give like a whole rundown on who he is, but he has hosted everything. He's hosted music shows. He's hosted game shows. He's hosted kids shows. He is like a true celebrity, a superstar in England, to the point where he's created a character that was reasonably popular about 30 years ago named Mr. Blobby. He also created this show. We'll get to that in a little bit. As to how it sort of came about. And also, he was even known, believe it or not, when Live Aid happened in 1985.
Yes.
Do you remember that Phil Collins played in both the London and the Philadelphia Live Aid?
Yes.
He flew the Concorde from one to the other.
Right. Noel Edmonds drove Phil Collins to Heathrow Airport to get there.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
Man, that must be in a deleted scene in the Bohemian Rhapsody DVD of Noel Edmonds trying to drive Phil Collins while Freddie Mercury is performing on stage.
So what happened, going back a little bit, is Noel Edmonds, he hosted the British version of Deal or No Deal for over 11 years, from 2005 until literally the end of 2016. I think the last episode was after Christmas of 2016, but before New Year's of 2016. So literally the last week of 2016. And so he had this idea for a show which combined a game show with a sitcom. And, oh, it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be really fun, you know, combining a game show with some sitcom interludes and stuff like that. Didn't we sort of see that with Burt Ludden's Love Buffet?
Yeah.
But this is better than Burt Ludden's Love Buffet.
That's not saying much.
It is, but slightly. I sort of like Burt Ludden's Love Buffet because it was from the people who brought you future episode Nightstand with Dick Dietrich.
Oh, yeah.
Burt Ludden's Love Buffet, I do believe, is also on the list. So good job to those folks that did those shows. But so, yeah, it wasn't that much better. It was different, and more or less, it wasn't just different, it was weird. So, Greg, back in 2017, you had sent me a tweet about Cheap, 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 and it actually sort of compares one of your favorite shows. Can you share that tweet with everybody?
Yes, it's from a gentleman called at Michael M. Physics on Twitter, and this was the week that Twin Peaks The Return was airing its last two episodes. And the tweet read, "Don't worry about Twin Peaks ending. We've still got Cheap, 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 the second weirdest show on telly."
I wonder if Noel Edmonds had 30 super jackpots.
Do you think Noel Edmonds was the force that guided Dougie Jones to the mega jackpots at the Silver Mustang? He was in the red room with the man from another place who merged into that weird tree thing, and they were guiding Dougie Jones to the slot machine.
I just want to know what Noel Edmonds' coffee and pie is like. What, don't they serve coffee and pie at the Cheap 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 shop?
No, they didn't have any sort of food there. It was more or less a general store. It didn't have food in terms of being sold there. They didn't have like a cafeteria or a luncheonette or anything like that. It was like
your. Well, no wonder it was open for only 30 days.
Well, it was also like just an old-time general store that had just general merchandise. But also, since it had a sitcom, it wasn't just a general store. There was a small audience of about 10 or 12 contestants. There was no studio audience. There was just the 12 contestants, which, you know, if something wasn't really funny, that sort of showed because you don't have a laugh track going on. So about the game itself, we'll get to the game and then we'll get to the comedy side or the sitcom side, air quotes around comedy, because it wasn't terribly funny. So the game itself was very Price is Right-like in terms of you've got three items. And the idea is you just have to identify which one of the three is the cheapest. And like almost every game show since like 2005 or 2000, you have a money ladder. The money ladder on this show had eight steps, and the money ladder was as follows. 250 pounds for the first correct answer, 500 for the second, 1,000 for the third, 2,500 pounds for the fourth, 5,000 for the fifth. The sixth is worth 7,500 pounds. The seventh jumps all the way to 15,000 pounds. And the last one is 25,000 pounds. Now, there are no safe zones here, so you're always risking your money. However, again, just like about most game shows since 2000, you have helps, lifelines. Now, when you played the game, you had to make the decision whether you want to go on beforehand. So you're sort of blindly saying, we're going to go on. You don't know what could come out. You didn't know if it might be a really easy one or a really hard one, something you know a lot about or something you researched. So one of the helps was you got to see what the three items in the next question were. So that helps you out quite a bit there, especially if you're in the higher levels. At like 7,500 or 15,000 going for the next step. And then there was a help to get rid of the most expensive item. So that'll narrow it down to two. And the third help was that one item's price would be revealed. Now, again, you don't know whether it's the cheapest or the most expensive or in the middle, just that you could choose an item to see the price of. But also, these helps didn't get activated until you got that first 250-pound situation out of the way. Now, the products themselves, they ranged from, as we said earlier, food items. The first item on the game was actually baked beans. And you had different things like candles. You had coffins. You had
coffins.
Yes, they did
this
coffins.
This just got dark.
Well, it isn't your Price is Right with you. How much is the stick of butter, or which stick of butter is the least expensive?
So coffins did, man, where was Paul Barrow when you needed him for this show?
So anyway, the coffins.
I love that you no-sold that joke.
So yeah, the coffins. They actually had coffins in the studio. And actually, we're going to get to that a little bit, because one of the highlights of one of the episodes was one of Noel's assistants, who we're going to get to later as well, was trying out the coffins. As if that isn't, like, you know, morbid and creepy. But they're just different puzzles of varying difficulties. And again, the idea was just find which one is the cheapest. Not terribly difficult. It could be, because sometimes the difference was only a couple of pounds or a couple of pence when you're talking about stuff that's less than a pound. So you might have a difference between the middle price and the least expensive item of, say, 5 pence. You know, when you're talking about, like, the cost of postage stamps, which I believe was actually the topic of the sole $25,000 victory on this series. Somebody did go to $25,000, and believe it or not, when did it happen? On the last episode.
That's not crazy at all.
The last episode had a 25,000 pound win. There was a stamp involved in the 25,000 pound question. What it had to do is you had to guess which was least expensive: a stamp, a small loaf of bread, or a little carton of milk. And the milk was the cheapest. And they won the $25,000. And all the people in the audience, all 10 future contestants or wannabe contestants at this point, since it's the last episode, come by, congratulate the pair that won. And so do the staff members, if you will, the fellow actors.
Oh.
Yeah. And also, I should add, since I didn't mention it, two people played the game. So this wasn't a solo game. This is two people, friends or a mother, daughter, father, son, father, daughter, you know, brothers, siblings, what have you. They would play the game and presumably split the money. But also another interesting thing is the money, and I don't know if it's prop money or if it's real money. Well, it might be real, because remember, England doesn't take out taxes on game show winnings, so it could be real money going out the door. But so they actually pulled the money from the till of a cash register, because again, they're trying to sell the whole general store gimmick. There's an old cash register, and the store manager, who we'll get to in a little bit, takes the money out of the till. The money is all bundled up, like if you're going to a bank, and he just hands the stacks of bills to the contestants when they leave. But now the sitcom side of this. The game itself, very rudimentary. You mix in the sitcom element, and then you get why we're here talking about this.
Oh, yes.
There were actually 4 employees who helped out. You had Barry, who was played by Alex Lowe. He was the general manager of the store. And actually, he was like running the store when Noel, quote unquote, bought the store on the first episode. Noel comes in and, oh, you must be you must be Barry, the manager here. And Barry's very aloof. And one thing that Greg noticed, and whether this is on purpose or if this is real, he has the worst teeth ever.
Oh, yes. He is like the stereotypical British person with very horrible teeth.
Yes. And then there was a health and beauty and lifestyle expert named Mariana. Imagine the word marijuana without the U in the middle. It's M-A-R-I-J-A-N-A, played by Gabby Best. And she actually lived in a flat above the general store.
How convenient.
Yeah, she was never late. She's very personable, very frequently on the show. The reason I say that is because the next cast member I'm going to mention She had a tendency to always be late. I'm talking about Kelly, who was played by Emily Lloyd Saney. Kelly was habitually late. Habitually. Always late. Very sort of lazy, with all due respect. Kelly's role within the store is she was just a sales assistant. But you almost all the time you saw these pink headphones around her neck. Always jamming out to music. Yeah, work is secondary when she's around.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, we have the store handyman named Keith, who was played by Keel Smith Bino. And Keith, he was sort of like the hardest working person at the store. Again, he was like the maintenance man, the person that did everything. But there's one thing he doesn't do, and he doesn't do roofs. He'll do anything at the store, but he won't fix the roof. He even wears a jacket that says that. Keith's odd jobs. No job too big, no job too small, except roofing. I don't do roofing. That's on the back of his jacket, or his vest.
Okay, so, now you said Barry. Barry was the general manager of the store.
Barry was the general manager of the store.
Barry is actually also the name of a character that Alex Lowe created for Steve Wright's BBC Radio 2 show and Talk Radio's Ian Lee show. It was actually Barry from Watford.
Yes, Barry from Watford. And he actually has a podcast.
Barry from Watford has a podcast.
Barry from Watford has a weekly podcast, The Angelos and Barry Show. I wonder if he talked about this. Now I got to go on my device and look for the Angelos and Barry Show and see if
now,
he reflected about cheap, cheap, cheap once.
Oh, I have it right here.
Oh, no.
Hold up.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, they are the same people. Barry from Watford is the general manager of Noel's store in Cheap, Cheap, Cheap. This, according to Truth by Consensus Wikipedia.
Yeah, I assume he has the same accent, and he has the same bad teeth. Again, whether it's part of the shtick or if that's his natural look, who knows? I don't want to necessarily say I don't care, but yeah, again, that's part of his shtick is the bad teeth.
Meanwhile, Emily Lloyd Saney, if you're a subscriber to Prime Video, she is on 3 episodes of Catastrophe with Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney.
Wasn't one catastrophe enough?
I have no idea.
I'm talking about cheap, cheap, cheap.
Oh!
Wasn't one catastrophe enough?
Oh! Greg, I'd like to report a murder.
I just killed cheap, cheap, cheap. No, no, no. But again, there was a sitcom side to this, and there were some anecdotes in every episode. There were backstories, like the time that Keith tried his hand as a camera operator and it didn't go so well, primarily because, given the size of the studio, Keith was backing up the camera and he backed up too far.
Oops.
Uh-huh. There was, and actually there's an episode guide, believe it or not. Not really a thorough episode guide. So, episode 1, Noel opens Noel's store for the first time. And, contestants try to win £25,000 while manager Barry and his staff ensure there's never a dull moment. Okay, if you say so. Episode 2, delivery man Keith gets caught up in traffic. Barry and Noel try out a tandem ride and do a mother and daughter and know enough about mini rolls to win cash. So, right there, there's two more items we didn't talk about. They had bicycles as one of the items. There's at least one tandem bicycle. It might have been a tandem bicycle and like a mountain bike and a BMX bike. But yeah, there were bikes on there. Mini rolls were an item. And we're going to get to more of the items as we go down this list here. Episode 3, brothers Ollie and Johnny hope to take away thousands from Noel's store by knowing their takeouts. Jordan and Manda want just enough for a new car. Here's the one I told you earlier. Mariana tries a coffin out for size.
Oh.
And what the coffins were, one was like really fancy, And one was, I think, basically like a refrigerator box, not even kidding, cardboard. And I think like the third one was like a coffin for a dog. I'm not even joking when I say that. And the weird thing is the most expensive item was the coffin for the dog. The least expensive, obviously, was a cardboard box. But yeah, that was one episode. She tried out a coffin. Episode four. Oh, this one's great. I'm going to say the first six words, and I'm going to wait for Greg's reaction. A bird leaves an unwanted deposit.
Oh.
I don't know what to say about that.
He took a poop.
Yeah, I get that, Mike.
So yeah, bird leaves an unwanted deposit in Noel's store. Noel worries about the takings, and Lionel and her mother hope to pay off her student debt by winning £25,000. They actually did have live animals there. There was like a duck and a goose. I don't remember exactly what types of birds they were, but they were live birds, presumably as pets, but I'm sure at some point you could have used it as dinner. But yeah, a bird left a little thing on the table, and guess who had to clean it up? Not Keith. Noel Edmonds had to clean it up.
Oh. Anybody want an empty bird?
Noel's worth tens or hundreds of millions of pounds, and he has to clean up a bunch of bird crap.
Noel Edmonds, ladies and gentlemen. Always willing to give to the cause.
Episode 5. Three toilet seats provide a 2,500-pound conundrum, and Barry demonstrates his spider-catching technique, and Wayne Sleep calls in to complain. They did have celebrities generally on the Friday episode, so they had like six celebrities. Nobody really, I think many of us would know on this side of the Atlantic, but known to the United Kingdom population. Episode 6, one couple risks going solo. Keith tries out a new delivery vehicle, and there's confusion between some nuns and Ollie Murs.
See, I know who Ollie Murs is.
Ollie Murs, if you know some UK pop culture, is not unknown. He's a very popular musician. Oh, also, former contestant on Noel Edmonds' Deal or No Deal. No joke there. He was on, I think, in the first year or two. Yes. Episode 7, Kelly shows off her gymnastics skills. Keith gets everyone a takeaway, and contestant Steve gets all emotional over pies. Because who doesn't get emotional over pie?
Yeah, who doesn't get emotional over pies?
You ever had the Fayetteville Pie Company? The chef's kiss of Popeyes, let me tell you.
You know who doesn't get emotional over pies, guys?
Greg, you got your sitcom in my game show. No.
You know who doesn't get emotional over pies?
Who's that?
The Rock. And you know why.
Why?
I know why.
Mike got it. Mike got the joke.
Because you can smell what the Rock's cooking or something like that.
Yes. There's something else about pies, but I won't say it on this show. That's for dang sure.
No.
You got to wake up pretty early in the morning to fool me there, Grego. All right.
Thing on late night TV.
Episode 8. Bobby Davro gets devious with Barry. Oh, my God. Here's another one that, again, this just shows the total lunacy in what you might see on this show. Three dog outfits could be worth thousands. And Noel has a problem with swans. Not related to the bird that took the crap on the table in episode 4. Episode 9, Keith gets stuck in the lift. Yeah, he got stuck in the lift.
Like, can he fix it?
In the lift?
You can fix a lift while you're stuck on the lift.
Noel's got the money. He can afford to get somebody to help him out.
There you go.
And we talked about perpetually late Kelly. Guess what? She has a car crash.
Oh, boy.
Oh!
Yeah, so she's even later now.
Oh, that's...
And Barry shows off his dad dancing.
Oh.
Oh, that's a sight I don't want to see, Barry dancing.
I can get you the episode. And Kate and Alexis's cheese knowledge can win them £25,000? Question mark? Episode 10, Kelly gets some fire training. Two ladies develop a crush on Barry. Ooh, maybe that's why he was doing the dancing. And do Pete and Rich know enough about magazines to win £25,000? Episode 11, Barry threatens Noel with a mallet.
Jeez.
Ow.
Okay. I'm sorry. I can't see Barry attacking anybody. Tube drivers get coy over a corset. A couple lose the way over a set of maps.
It's hard to figure out which one of those plots is the actual game.
Oh, here it comes right now. Anthony and Ashley hope to win £25,000 before their game turns into a dog's dinner. But enough about whatever Barry's eating tonight. Episode 12, there's a musical interlude courtesy of a banjo, some bongos, and a man called Bert. And, oh, did you have enough of dancing when Barry did it, Greg?
Yes.
Well, too bad. You're getting more. Keith and Noel have a boogie. Keith and Noel are having a boogie. Yeah. More dancing.
No.
I think Greg wants Kelly to dance, and she's the only one who's not dancing.
Yes, I do want to see Kelly dance. I don't want more Barry dancing.
Episode 13. Sisters Lily and Liz hope to clean up with their knowledge of feather dusters. And Noel gives shop assistant Kelly a shoulder to cry on. Aww.
That's nice.
Oh, I just saw episode 14. This brings back flashbacks. I remember seeing this episode when it first aired. Barry causes a splash when one couple must choose the cheapest item of swimwear. And I'm not joking. What did Barry do? He put on a woman's bathing suit over his clothes, his work clothes.
I'm done.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it makes that whole Barry dad dancing thing look really good, doesn't it, Greg?
Oh, I'm reasonably certain that it gets better, and by better I mean so much worse.
By worse, absolutely. We're halfway there. Episode 15. Noel's store goes Gallic when Barry has a French promotion. Vicky Michelle makes Barry go ooh la la as more bargain spotting contestants set their sight on a £25,000 jackpot. Yes, Barry had a French phase.
Oh.
This is like 10 seasons of sitcoms rolled into 30 shows. Barry's going through phases like every episode. He's dad dancing. He's got a French phase. He's putting on women's bathing suits.
They're pretty much firing up the Nick at Night and see what's on the schedule that day, and that's the show for today.
Going back to Twin Peaks for a second, I wonder at what point Barry's going to watch Dr. Jacoby on the Dr. Amp show and wonders when he's going to shovel his way out of the you-know-what.
Episode 16. Can carrots help Ian and Nick find their way to winning big money? Oh, and I mentioned this earlier. Meanwhile, odd job man Keith tries his hand at being a cameraman. And it didn't work so well.
Oh,
and if you did that over here, that would be a union violation.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Episode 17. Have sisters Kelly and Kirstie bitten off more than they can chew? Oh, gosh, I just saw the end of this. Have they bitten off more than they can chew when they have to choose between the cheapest edible insect?
Did they get that from Bunzai?
No, they got that from Fear Factor. If they got it from Bonzen, then the players would have to bet on who would eat the most.
And it has to be incredibly racist too.
And it also has to be incredibly racist too, next episode.
Oh, and that's a callback to episode 26 from last week. Go check it out. Episode 18, Cheryl Baker pops into Noel's store to make an exchange, and will James and Sophia's knowledge of rackets get them through to the final stages of the unique game show? Episode 19, a spoon becomes a £5,000 conundrum for one couple. Keith hires an apprentice, and Kelly has an idea to help Noel attract a younger audience.
Oh, boy.
Cancel cheap. That'll do the trick.
No, that would not help at all. Because otherwise we'd be done with this show.
But we still have 11 episodes to go.
Exactly.
Episode 20, maybe the only name that anybody from this side of the Atlantic would know, and that would be sort of tenuous. Snooker legend Dennis Taylor comes into Noel's store to return faulty goods. And can one couple's knowledge of picnic hampers, or picnic baskets as they're called over here, help them carry home big money in the unique game show?
You're right. That is tenuous.
Picnic baskets was... why wasn't there a cameo from Yogi Bear?
Because the show's cheap, cheap, cheap.
It's cheap, cheap, cheap. There's nothing to reap, reap, reap.
Jeez.
And I'm a little boo-boo. Next episode.
Chico's Yogi Bear is the Nipsey Russell of bears. Oh, my gosh. Episode 21. Noel welcomes more contestants to the store. Keith takes a busman's holiday. Mariana takes fashion inspiration from Noel. And Barry receives a worrying phone call from Environmental Health.
I'm sorry. Mariana takes fashion advice.
From Noel, a guy who used to wear plaid.
A guy who used to wear plaid and silken blouses with dragons on them. This same Noel.
Maybe he's a fashion icon. Who knows? The same Noel who, yeah, looks like a working dad. He's giving fashion inspiration to Mariana. Episode 22. Another visit to the eccentric store. Barry showcases his fancy dress sale with some unlikely models. Keith's dodgy DIY skills cause chaos. And Noel gets a personal trainer. And yes, I'm going to see what weird models there are for the clothing.
Oh, no.
We need to report on this.
Okay. While you figure that one out, I'm going to see what a busman's holiday is.
I'm sure it's just like a vacation of some sort, like a working man's holiday.
Probably, but okay, busman's holiday. Okay, a busman's holiday is a vacation or form of recreation that involves doing the same thing that one does at work. Example, a fire crew's Christmas outing turned into a busman's holiday when their coach caught fire. This show not only entertains, but also educates.
Occasionally,
yes. Mike, did you find the models yet? Because now I'm genuinely curious.
Oh, wait. Oh, there's the weird models. Okay. So what the hell is this? I got to turn on my audio.
Okay.
Please welcome our first two cameramen in fancy dress.
Oh.
Available to buy from the shop.
Oh, cameramen. One of them's dressed as a pirate. The other looks like the rat from the Nutcracker.
The Rat King.
The Rat King, and there's somebody coming in who looks like a sailor. Oh, now a cowboy. Oh, this is like here's one of the cameramen with a coconut bra on and a grass skirt and a rainbow lei. Oh, it's just a fashion show. That's all it is.
Funny they ask, where would they be without a sense of humor? definitely not canceled after 30, that's for sure. Anyway!
They'd be on a better show. Episode 23, another visit to Noel's eccentric store. One couple hopes their knowledge of jeans will help them walk away with thousands, while Mariana reveals a hidden talent. She's going to save the show from cancellation. That's her talent. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
Episode 24. Noel Edmonds opens the doors to more contestants, hoping to win 25. They're like saying the same damn thing. We're going to play for £25,000. They're just rewriting it 30 different ways.
Yes! That's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, Noel Edmonds opens the doors to more contestants hoping to win a £25,000 jackpot. Barry's wife, Margaret, has a favor to ask Noel, and Russell Grant comes to complain about the noise. Barry has a wife. I'm sorry, ladies. If you're
Wait a second. You said Barry has a wife.
Barry's wife, Margaret.
Okay.
And Margaret has a favor to ask Noel.
The character of Margaret was on Barry from Watford's stage show. Do you know who played Margaret in the stage show?
No clue.
Chico, do you know?
No idea.
Catherine Tate.
Oh! She of A,
yes.
The Office, and B, Doctor Who. And C,
yes.
Future installments, The Catherine Tate Show.
Yeah, because we definitely have to talk about the time they did the Children in Need special with Catherine Tate's Lauren Cooper character with David Tennant, who turned out to be the Doctor.
I'm putting it on the list now.
While Chico does that, we're going to go to episode 25. 1 week to go after this. It's business as usual in the store. Kelly has a beauty emergency. Gasp.
What?
Mariana causes heartbreak. Double gasp.
Double what?
And Keith invites Noel to a lad's night out. So where are Keith, Barry, and Noel going tonight?
Oh, they can't go far. They still have a game show to run.
But the shop closes after every episode, so they're going someplace after the show's done, hypothetically.
Hypothetically, yes.
Well, here's the question. This shop is only open for like a half hour.
No, a full hour. This is an hour or 45 minutes.
Oh, that's right. This is an hour show. So it's like, what? Does anybody else come into this shop?
No, there's really no customers that come in. I mean, you don't hear the bell ring unless, like, Noel's coming in. So maybe they close the shop down to do the show.
Which would be kind of sort of weird.
Like, this show isn't weird enough.
Fair point.
And we haven't gotten to the weirdest part yet. Episode 26, Noel's store opens for another day in another game of Which is the Cheapest? Again, you're rephrasing the same thing. Oh my gosh. Mariana plays ball, Kelly pulls a fast one, and Noel's new shoes get everyone talking.
Whoa! Noel has some new kicks.
I'm going there.
Yo, paint a word picture. What are these kicks?
What type of kicks would be appropriate for a 67-year-old man back in 2017? His kicks, they're very gaudy-looking, almost like loafers.
Dragons on them?
That's not terribly far from what they look like.
Oh, God, I was kidding.
Well, I can't tell what they are, but they're a variety of different colors. I see red, white, black, like a tan or a beige, and they're leather shoes. I mean, they look high quality. I don't even know how I could describe the design. I mean, they're definitely Noel Edmonds type of shoes. I mean, if he was wearing a dragon shirt, these would not clash with a dragon shirt. Let's say that.
Okay.
Sufficient?
Good enough for me.
Episode 27. Manager Barry goes fishing without leaving the store. Three bunches of flowers could be worth 8,500 pounds, and Noel meets himself from the future.
Now it's gotten crazy.
No TARDIS involved, Greg.
I was going to say, did Noel take Ed Begley's TARDIS out for his spin?
I don't know if that would work overseas, though, because does Ed Begley's TARDIS work on 110 or 220? He may need a converter.
He may need a converter to convert his TARDIS from NTSC to PAL, or whatever current they use.
From NTSC to PAL.
Well, it wouldn't run on gallons of vegetable oil. It would run on liters meters? Of vegetable oil.
Liters. Yeah, because metric system.
Well, maybe since Brexit they've got back to imperial. So, in short, I don't know what the hell's going on here.
Oh, and 27 or 28 episodes in, I'm reminded you can only use one help per question. So you can't use, like, all three of them on there. You can't get rid of the most expensive and reveal the price of an item. So only one per customer there per round. So you have to use all three of them essentially in seven rounds. So now we get into episode 28. Noel Edmonds welcomes more bargain-hungry contestants to the show. I'm sorry, it's rerunning the same crap. Barry tries his hand at doing Noel's job, and there's a breakout of Kardashianitis in the store. I don't want to know what Kardashianitis is. It could be more contagious than the coronavirus.
Let's just say I hope you have some antibiotics over the counter there.
I just wonder if that means that Mariana or Kelly is going to go after a fifth-rate basketball player like Tristan Thompson. I said it. You're a fifth-rate basketball player for Tristan Thompson. I don't care if you play for my team.
Well, it could be worse. Could be Kendall Jenner.
Jeez.
Look up the gif, ladies and gentlemen.
Episode 29. Oh, here's where it totally goes off the rails, I think. It's a busy day at the store. Noel and Manager Barry are run off their feet when staff go on strike. Mariana celebrates a birthday, and Noel has a chat with a duck called Dave. And you're probably saying, what could Noel have to say to a duck named Dave?
I don't know. I literally have absolutely no idea.
Well, guess what I have queued up.
Oh, God. Okay, Mike. Hit me.
How's that feel, Trevor? I was trying to help Trevor. I really wanted.
It's Dave. Dave! Not Trevor. Tell me then.
It's from the Oak and Rope Company.
That's amazing.
They didn't want to know that.
What about the toilet brush?
I have a lot to say about the toilet brush, but, the Tower Railways.
What? Don't do this again. So he's talking to a stuffed duck about the game and the toilet brush that's on offer here.
What about the toilet brush? Has anybody said anything about the toilet brush?
They're conversing about the toilet brush. What's more expensive, an aluminum towel rack? A giant toilet paper roll holder at that probably holds, I'm guessing probably like 18 rolls of toilet paper. It's huge. Or a toilet brush in a metal tin, a metal container.
What could Noel and company possibly do to just wrap this whole enterprise up, I wonder?
Well, we're getting to that right now. Episode 30. The doors open for the last time in this series.
Wait, remember, this is British. So instead of series, you could say season. But we all really know it's
series. But it's not wrong in this case if you go with the other definition. Noel makes the most of a dress-down Friday, and when Barry is short-staffed, the temp agency sends Lionel Blair along to lend a hand. And as I mentioned earlier, this episode had the sole 25,000-pound victory in the entire series. Did they do anything special? No. Like I said, all the crew members, the cast members, they hugged the couple that won, the two people that won. So did Noel. So did the other contestants. And then they got sent off. And let's bring up two more contestants to play. I almost said Deal or No Deal. Two more contestants. Don't you wish it was Deal or No Deal? Two more people to play Cheap, Cheap, Cheap. Oh, my. But there's a couple of things that Droid mentioned earlier. Just the weirdness. Yeah, it's the second weirdest show on TV next to Twin Peaks, as somebody said. But some of the reviews I have up is Noel Edmonds, cheap, 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 the most tragically weird show ever made. Tragically weird.
No, normally, is that the headline?
That's the headline.
Okay, normally Betteridge's Law would apply in this case, but not in this case.
It's a weird show. And actually, the first sentence even says it. A little birdie may have told you about Cheap, Cheap, Cheap. The new Noel Edmonds afternoon quiz set to push Twin Peaks all the way for the title of the year's weirdest television series. It's right there in the first line of the story. The Cheap, Cheap, Cheap comparison to Twin Peaks. And Greg is dead.
I am dead.
In short, it kind of reminds you of what would happen if Noel Edmonds was the guy running the counter on Future Installment. Open all night, open all night, open all night, open all night, open all night.
Yes, sorry, that's coming later this summer, yes. Oh, it's just all these articles just... Oh, they say this is the a bad show. But also, just something I want to add, and we haven't even mentioned, we mentioned that Noel Edmonds created this show, but what company produced the show? You're not going to believe this. Hat Trick Productions, who, if you don't know, is behind Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yep.
Have I Got News for You?
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a quality production company which has had success for decades. I mean, you're talking about Have I Got News for You? That's been on the BBC in one form or another for 30 years. And
Whose Line has been on somewhere in the world for over 30 years.
And at least in America, it's coming on almost 20 years. Since we have that little about 6-year gap between the ABC family, where they sort of like put the scraps together, and the CW version. The CW version's been on 7 years. Wow. But yeah, so every production company has a bad show. I just don't think many of them have any as bad as Cheap, Cheap, Cheap. Plus also, just to show how bad Cheap, Cheap, Cheap was in the ratings, can either of you guess how many people in the United Kingdom, and we're talking about not just England, we're talking about Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, how many people saw, what was the low number in terms of ratings? How many people saw an episode that was rated, rated for like Nielsen type ratings? How many people do you think saw it? And maybe I should give you a baseline. Let me give you a baseline as to the population of the UK. So approximately there are 66.5 million people in the United Kingdom. So we're talking about roughly 1/5 the United States population. So how many of those, how many viewers did an episode of Cheap, Cheap, Cheap have at one point?
45,000.
Not that 70, low.
70,000.
Greg's much closer. 80,000 people. 80,000 viewers.
That's a no bueno.
That's no bueno, especially when you compare it to Deal or No Deal, which I think easily got millions of viewers per day. I mean, again, it was a show that ran for 11 years. Noel was beloved. It wasn't handled the same way our Deal or No Deal was. It was more or less almost like a serial of sorts, because you didn't have just one contestant pick the briefcases from models. You had the other contestants holding the briefcases, and then one would get chosen every day. So you might have somebody who's on the show 30 or 40 episodes until they get picked.
Yeah, this was the syndicated version of Deal or No Deal before the syndicated version of Deal or No Deal was the syndicated version of Deal or No Deal.
Well, but the syndicated version of Deal or No Deal was one set of contestants for the week. Literally, you'd have contestants who'd be on this show for 30 or 40 episodes. I think I remember reading somewhere that one contestant was on like 45 episodes before they were chosen. And then to make matters worse, I think that contestant won the one pence. So they gave up. They gave up days or weeks of their life, their job, and they won 1 pence, the equivalent of like 1 penny over here.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not like the U.S. deal or no deal the way we did it, but it was very compelling TV. Must watch TV. If you've never seen the British version, find it. It's a great show. A lot better, I think, than the U.S. version. But anyhow, that was cheap, cheap, cheap. It was bad, bad, bad.
But it was strange, strange, strange.
But you know what it also was, Chico?
Cheap, cheap, cheap. It was a thing on TV.
At least it was a thing on TV overseas.
Hello, it's the manager, Todd Weber, and I'm here to tell you all about stuff going on placetobenation.com and the Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed. Every Monday, we've got a great show called the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, and they watch The Office and break it down for you. They are currently on season 5, so we've got about 4 more seasons to go. They just finished episodes 13 and 14. Those were covering the Prince Paper Company and Stress Relief Part 1. Remember, they are about to get to Scott's Tots. So that's what one of the highlights of The Office you want to check out. Every Tuesday, most Tuesdays, we have Diamond Conversations. Host Chad B. Talks to compelling baseball authors here on Place to Be Nation Pop, talking a lot about the Astros cheating scandal on the recent episodes. On Wednesday, as you probably know, it was a thing on TV. Looks at the most bizarre and obscure television shows you can even think of. Every Thursday is Atherton Corner. Andy Atherton has his plethora of shows, including Laugh-In Theater, Looking Forward, Looking Back, Pop Goes the Classics, Pop Goes Movies, The Great Debate, and The Year in Pop. So every Thursday is Andy time. Stay tuned for lots of other great shows coming up on Place to Be Nation Pop in the next few weeks or months. PlaceToBeNation.com has lots going on as well. Every Wednesday, we've got the weekly walk around the World Wide Web. There we go. Say that 3 times fast by the legendary Glenn Butler. This week, he's talking about mushroom butts, the Flopatron, Tom Brady's new career, a Komodo dragon ready to get it on. Yeah. And the worst place to put a potato. So check that out. We also have lots of wrestling written content and the weekend playlist every week on PlaceToBeNation.com. Join our Facebook group, PTBN Tournaments. In this current cycle, we are voting on the greatest sports logos. I am all my choices have already been eliminated. Maybe the San Jose Sharks. That's the last one I've got going on. We also have the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed featuring the mothership show, Place to Be Nation, PTBN podcast, the mothership, talking about vintage WWF action they're currently in the year 1990. Chronological look back at all the happenings, the house shows, the pay-per-view events, even the obscure things like SummerSlam Fever, a show you can find on YouTube and listen to on our latest episode. But now it's time to get back to Greg, Chico, and Mike, and they are going to talk about Tom Poston. Yes, Tom Poston, Mr. Brickley. He is a character actor who I know from Mork and Mindy, and he was also on Newhart, of course, and he dabbled in game shows, not just on Match Game and shows like that, but he was a host at times. So check it out, the latest episode of It Was a Thing on TV, episode 29.
Episode 29, Submission 182, Tom Poston, Game Show Tomfoolery. So Tom Poston, you probably know best for playing George Utley on the sitcom Newhart, but his career spans much longer than that. He had been on television right to near the very end, up until the 2000s. he had been on Mork and Mindy in the 70s and early 80s. He had been on Coach. He was on Home Improvement. He was even a clown character on future installment. Committed.
And also he made two guest appearances on future installment Good Morning Miami.
Yes. And he also was on another future episode, The Lone Gunman.
Yes, The Lone Gunman, which predicted 9/11.
So he got around, to say the least. Tom Poston did a number of game shows. He did To Tell the Truth in the 50s and 60s. He did I've Got a Secret. He did What's My Line. He did Password. He did the original Match Game. He also did the 70s version of Match Game. He was on for 2 weeks.
And he was a Senator Square on Hollywood Squares one time.
Yeah, late in the run, in the 70s, early 1980 run. Plus also in the 80s, he did Super Password. He did Body Language.
And he was also on future entry Battlestars, which, he was on Battlestars. And by the way, Mike, in that Alex Trebek interview on the American Television Archive, Alex actually tells a funny story with Tom Poston on Battlestars.
It seems like we could have a bunch of funny stories about Tom Poston on game shows. And actually, we're going to talk about three of his really interesting incidents today. The first one we're going to talk about is Tom Poston on the $25,000 pyramid. Interestingly enough, he was only on the $25,000 pyramid, the version that ran on CBS in the 80s. He was only on 1 week, even though he played Password and Super Password and Password Plus. So you'd think he'd have a knack for the word games. And they'd use them more often. Plus, also, again, Newhart was on CBS, so why not promote from within? Makes sense, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
But he was only on this 1 week in June of 1986, and maybe his performance at the Winner's Circle explains why he only did 1 week on the pyramid. Roll it, Greg.
Here's your first subject. Go.
The numbers, the solutions, the fractions.
The answer, the
fractions.
The
numbers, fractions. 2 + 2 = 4.
The formula.
Okay, pass.
Next.
I am a special toy, and little girls love me and carry me around. And pass that one. Pass, next. Pass. And this is an oyster or a clam.
Things that grow in the sea, crustaceans.
Pass, pass.
Next. Simmer down now.
Okay, this is your bed coil.
Spring.
These are ragged clothes. Basic thing. Oh,
element.
I'm doing terrible. Okay, let's go back to the beginning one. 2 + 2 = 4.
I know, but that's some.
Now, wait a minute. This is an all-time record, folks.
I shouldn't sit here.
Where have
you
I gone wrong?
Zero.
Zero.
Oh,
zero.
That is a record.
Now,
I've never seen
it's
that.
Not his fault.
Proud to be a part
it's not
of
your fault.
Mike, Billy Crystal's 28-second run on the Pyramid Winner's Circle. This was not.
Yeah, that was never in jeopardy. You can't really play along because you may or may not be able to know what the category is based on the clues given. Plus, also, we're not going to fault Tom Poston entirely here. The contestant was either very jittery, very nervous, or just was very indecisive as to how she wanted to play the game because she passed on all sorts of categories. But I have the categories here, and we'll play a little round with Greg and Chico, starting with the $50 box and then increasing by $50 increments. So okay. The first one, the plus sign, the minus sign, the equals, the numbers.
Stuff and stuff, mathematics symbols.
Things in arithmetic, $50. So now the second one, I was a popular kids toy in the early 80s, and kids had to adopt me.
What a Cabbage Patch Kid would say.
Right, yes. Now, the thing is, that was 1986. Cabbage Patch Kids were still a thing. They were still somewhat popular, but the popularity had definitely waned from their peak, like in 83, 84. $150, a walnut, an oyster, a clam.
Things you pop open?
Things with a shell?
Things with a shell, yeah. And she did say an oyster and a clam, but then she frantically passed it. So she didn't give enough time for Tom to totally think it out. The $200 one, a cuckoo clock, a mattress, inside, a thing with a spring, yeah. And this got buzzed, as you heard, because she said the mattress coils or the metal coils in a mattress.
And
that's not necessarily a thing that has a spring. That is a spring.
I'll tell you what, Coily from a case of spring fever would be very upset with that being disqualified.
The $250 box. Unkempt clothing. This one's tough. Unkempt clothing. Oh my gosh, I'm really sort of stuck on this one. Things that are shabby.
Yeah, that would be very, very sticky.
That's more of a $300 clue than a $250, I think.
What was the $300?
Well, I'm going to give it to you right now, and I have the perfect clue for this.
Okay.
And I hope this isn't too academic for you. John D. Rockefeller's oil.
Things that are standard.
Bingo. I think that's the perfect clue. I mean, Chico just proved that. John D. Rockefeller's oil, because he founded Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, again, I'm not going to put much blame on Tom for this, because the contestant really just kept passing very quickly after 5 seconds. And I can hear
the panic in her voice. She was very panicky. It's like, I have no idea. It's like, I've lost it. Let me just get this over with and see what I can do from here.
And the thing is, and this is actually something that happened on Jeopardy in the last 2 weeks or so, the nerves got the best of her.
Yeah.
There was a contestant on roughly 2 weeks as the time of this episode being published, where she ended up well into the negatives. I think it was like negative 6,200 or 6,400. And people were mocking her on social media, as people will do. And the thing is, if you watched her, you could visibly see her trembling and shaking. I felt so bad for her. Plus, also, obviously, she's qualified to be on the show. She passed the test, and she got on the show, and not everybody does that. But she was just an absolute nervous wreck. I felt so bad for her.
Hey, nerves are undefeated. If you do not get... I'll tell you right now, you get up on that stage, you're going to get a case of nerves. And if you don't get a case of nerves and you are on that stage, you are a psychopath.
And the thing is, Chico, you and me have both been in that situation. Mine's a little different than yours, but still very similar. You obviously have been on Jeopardy. You've been on Let's Ask America. I was on the Hardball hot seat. Oh, by the way, future installment, we're going to talk about my entire, I don't want to call it ordeal, my experience, because it's not because it's a bad show or anything. It's a very interesting story. But again, that's a future episode. We've both been there, and I know when I was there, I hadn't had sleep in probably 2 or 3 days. I was visibly tired. I was very twitchy. Even the first question that was asked of me, I wanted to say answer A, which I knew was the right answer, but out of my mouth came a totally different answer. And that was just because of nerves and also probably because I wasn't just, like, thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I just showed that clip to a couple of my students about a week and a half ago, and they commented, "Oh, Mr. Klaus, you're so stupid. You haven't gotten the first 3 questions right." And I said, "Sit back and calm down." And then I rattle off like 8 or 9 questions in a row, right? And they're like, "Oh, how did you know that?" It's like, don't doubt the Klaus.
No.
Don't doubt Big Papa Klaus.
There's a reason I'm your teacher. Don't doubt me. So, again, nerves gets the best of all of us. So it happens, and unfortunately, sometimes it happens at the worst possible time. But now the second one, this is Tom Poston's doing. This wasn't the contestant's fault. This wasn't anybody else's fault. This is all on Tom Poston. This happened in March 26th, 1982, on the final episode of Password Plus, the final alphabetics in the history of Password Plus.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
And there's only $20,000 at stake. Not $5,000, because they instituted an increasing jackpot until it's won at the time. So this is for $20,000, and here's what he does.
"We're going to give you 10 passwords beginning with the letter K and going alphabetically to the letter T. And if you get all 10 in 60 seconds, you get an additional $20,000. And Mr. Poston is here to help you. Tom, let's look at that first word, which begins with K, and we'll get to the business at hand. There you have it. Think of your clues. Good luck to both of you. You have 60 seconds. Go.
Fly. String.
Kite.
L.
Keep going. Keep going. L.
Automobile.
Lincoln.
Chauffeur.
Limousine.
M.
Animal.
Mouse.
Suckling. Not fish. Let's go on.
Disqualify, continue.
Mammal. Silk.
Nylon.
Right.
O.
Iron.
Ore.
P.
Trousers.
Pants.
Q.
Pen.
Quill.
R.
Twine.
Rope.
S.
Noodles.
Soup.
No. Italian.
Spaghetti. Right.
T.
Animal.
Tiger.
Right. Yes. Tell you, it is a major victory. However, since there was a disqualification or two, one of them was for illegal gestures, and the other one for using, you had the string with a kite, and you went like this, which is an illegal gesture. But she got the answer, she got the response, and the other one, you said 2 words, not fish. That was a disqualification. So what it means is that instead of $20,000, you get, because of the disqualifications, $12,000 because of the 2 illegal clues. But that's pretty darn good. Gives you a grand total of $14,000, or $12,000 plus the 2. So congratulations to you. That was terrific, Tom.
You got it. I couldn't have disqualified them.
It's better than just the 800 or so. We have a commercial. We'll be right back.
Oh, my.
So for clarification, he got beeped on the first clue because of a gesture. He was actually like pretending he was holding a rope, and that's an illegal clue. And your jackpot went down by 20% because of that. And then on the third word, he used 2 words together, a phrase, not fish. Nope, mm-hmm. Can't do that. I mean, if you put a little pause in there, not fish, you can get away with that, but you can't be like, not fish. Nope. No, not a sufficient amount of time between words. So the $20,000 became, well, still a decent amount of money, $12,000, but there was $8,000 left on the table. And clearly it looked like the contestant was going to get all 10 words, even if he didn't do illegal stuff.
Let me check inflation calculator for a second. What $12,000 would be in 20 today? $12,000 would be the equivalent of $32,172.31.
Not an insignificant amount of money at all.
Nope.
But we gotta say, one of my favorite part about this final alphabetics is when Tom gets beeped for the kite. He gives a little look to the side, like by the camera, like whoa.
Yeah, he. I think he was trying to do like body language on Password Plus.
So body language would come 2 years later on another network.
Yes, with Tom Kennedy, as a matter of fact. We should also note that the alphabetics was at the start of the episode. That was the first thing in the episode, and we said it was the last alphabetics. The entire rest of the show was one main game, because at the time, Password Plus wasn't $300. You had to go to $500, and they changed the structure of the payouts per puzzle. So they ended up playing like five or six puzzles, and then lo and behold, person wins $600, time's up, but we'll be nice and we'll give you another $5,000 for winning alphabetics. But Greg, that's not the reason we're here. Really, the reason we're here is something you want to mention.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We originally planned this episode when we started this podcast back in late September, early October. And Mike came up with the subject, Tom Poston word game tomfoolery. But then, somewhere along the way, something came to our attention that we just had to change the title of this show and bump it up on the calendar. And that one incident occurred on December 23rd, 1983. And where else did it occur but the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour? That's right, folks. We're going back to our subject from episode one.
And we didn't know this at the time.
No.
Nope.
This didn't come up because we were like 2 weeks into the reruns on Buzzer.
Right. And yeah, this would come about 7 weeks later. As we said, it was the episode before Christmas, December 23rd of 1983. And we have a champion, Cindy Charbonneau, who on the previous episode, she did it. She won the $30,000.
And who did she win the $30,000 with, by the way?
Did she win with Leonard Fry?
Yeah, that you damn right she did.
You're damn right she won with Leonard Fry.
So right now we're calling back to both episode one and episode two of this podcast.
And yes, we are actually. And yeah, so she won $30,000 with Leonard Fry. She was the second winner of $30,000 on Match Game Hollywood Squares, even though it was the third win, because like in week three or week four, we had somebody win $30,000 on back-to-back episodes.
Yeah, the man with the magnificent beard.
A very magnificent beard. But now she's on her second day. She's got like $31,000, $32,000 in her pocket. And she goes to the super match.
Well, first off, in the audience match beforehand, she got screwed. In my opinion, she got screwed out of $1,000.
She got way screwed. Well, I would say yes, she got screwed. But they do want exact wording. And what the blank was blank lover.
A blank lover.
The South Park episode Chicken Lover wouldn't be for another 15 years.
No, it wouldn't be for 14. No, you're right, 15 years.
Yeah.
So Cindy at the Supermatch, so for blank lover, the way that Cindy fills it in is she says hot lover. Good answer.
Okay.
The $250 answer, the third most popular answer, is Latin lover.
I've been called one of those. Okay, that joke obviously fell flat. Next.
And a hush falls over the crowd. The $500 answer is lousy lover.
I've been called one of those too.
I was just going to say the same thing. No. And then, gosh, Greg, if you say you're this, I'm quitting. You guys can finish up the show. The $1,000 answer was red hot lover. Not hot lover, red hot lover. And they buzzed her. Which makes sense because they do say you need to be, you have to have an exact match, at least at the super match, the head-to-head match part. But I know they gave some concessions to similar incidents on the 70s version. Plus, I'm sure we'll see some in the 83-84 Match Game Hollywood Squares version as well. So they judge her as wrong. She's playing for a consolation $100, and she's going to multiply it by the 10, 20, or 30, depending on who she picks. She goes with Tom Poston, and the question is Johnny Blank. Johnny Blank.
Johnny Blank. This was 1983, right?
Yeah.
This is the end of 1983. And
there's only one obvious answer for this.
There's one obvious answer, but we'll let it play out. Here's the entire segment. It's about a good minute and a half, 2 minutes long. Enjoy.
Now we ask you to choose a star. Remember, there's a 10, 20, or 30 concealed number in front of everyone, and we'll multiply that $100 by whatever number is revealed now as you select a star.
Tom.
Tom Poston. Ready, set, go.
There you
10.
Go. 10 times.
All right, so that means you are playing for $1,000 here. $1,000 is okay. Listen, $1,000 added to the $31,000 would make it $32,000, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's good.
Good luck to you. Here it is. Johnny Blank. Johnny Blank. No help from the audience, please. Johnny Blank. No mumbling.
Mumble, 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 mumble.
No mumbling.
Mumble, mumble.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
While Tom Poston goes into a deep coma.
Look at it. Tom.
Before Christmas, Tom, would be helpful.
What do I have to do?
Put it in the slot.
Look at this.
Oh,
center.
I'm the one you mean. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
You're the one.
Oh, Tom. I don't know how to play the game.
You're the one.
For Tom. Tom Poston takes off.
I was out there speculating on various ones. Yeah. I got a whole bunch of things.
You know, Tom, you have such a goofy look on your face. It looked as if you were thinking, and all of a sudden you're sitting there doing nothing. You're in a coma. All right. Now,
this isn't even my idea. This comes from everybody on the
panel. Right, it's a consensus. Okay. For $1,000, how do you match Tom in filling in that blank? Johnny
Carson.
Okay. Tom, what do you say?
You idiots. That's the one.
They gave you the wrong.
It wasn't even my choice. I said.
Carson. All right. You got it. Now.
What other kind of hot
is? $32,800 for Cindy. Congratulations, Cindy. $32,800. And we'll be back after these messages.
What do I have to do?
So, yeah, Tom Poston had a mini coma there. He didn't know he was playing, and what do you have to do, Tom? Write the answer down, Johnny Blank.
Here's what I don't understand. He pulls the tab. He has to have some idea he's playing, right?
He has some idea that he's playing.
He's been on the show for like the whole week. Like, doesn't he have an idea of what's going on? What's been on the whole show?
Well, also, Gene tells Tom, yeah, here you need to fill in this blank. So obviously he's got to hear that, and it looks like he's thinking for a while, writes down an answer, then is contemplating another answer possibly, but then he totally zones out.
And in the meantime, when you watch the whole segment, you can see John Bauman is looking at someone backstage. So he hands Jim J. Bullock a note, and Jim J. Bullock pulls up the note to Tom Poston, making him try to pay attention. And then Gene says, "Before Christmas," huh? And then Tom's like, "Well, what do I have to do?"
Put the answer in the thing.
And then Tom's getting all apologetic. Meanwhile, Gene and the contestant are laughing it off, and Marty Cohen and Jim J. Bullock are strangling Tom. Mock strangling Tom, we should say. And lo and behold, what happens? She finally gives the answer, Johnny.
Carson.
Fill in the blank, guys. Johnny.
Carson.
Johnny Carson. And what does Tom put? Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson.
It was the longest $1,000 win in history.
Yes. This would never happen with Leonard Fry, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know who had the 30 that day?
Leonard Fry.
Leonard Fry, exactly. She should have gone back to Leonard after getting the 30,000 from him. She would have gotten another 3,000. But also, thank heavens she didn't go back to Leonard Fry, because we got this.
Yeah. You dang right we should be.
And that by itself is worth the $2,000 she missed out on.
Yeah. Her missing out on $2,000 was worth it for our entertainment.
But hey, she probably enjoyed every cent of that.
Oh, plus also, just watching the end credits to this episode, Nedra Voles and John Bauman are dancing at the end.
Yeah, of course you'd want to mention that.
Well, of course, it's Nedra Voles. She's the best thing on this show.
No, Leonard Fry is the best thing on this show.
Allison Arngrim, line one. Thank you.
Well, I got to say, Allison Arngrim's outfits in this past week's episodes of Matching Him Out with Squares on Buzzer were just on fire, I got to say.
They were lit, as the kids would say.
Twilight Littleton, I win.
Hashtag Twilight ahead 30. You know, one day we got to do, as a submission, the episode of Matlock where Twilight Littleton is on.
Oh, gosh.
Who says we can't just do a show on Twilight Littleton?
Certainly, Tom Poston had more sort of hiccups in an otherwise storied game show career, right?
Yeah, I mean, his career was excellent. Yeah, we all make little brain farts. And again, one of them totally was not his fault. And the other two ended up in victories, one significantly bigger than the other, so he didn't totally blow it.
That's true.
Right.
Well, you know, we all have our good days and bad days on game shows, and you know, Tom Poston's human like the rest of us, but those things happen.
Yeah, look, some things happen, and I'll tell you right now, time and tide and nerves and lights and stress, all undefeated. Throw Tom Poston in the mix, and well, what can I say? It was a thing on TV.
They were things on TV, absolutely. Well, as always, you can go to www.itwasathingontv.com, and we've got previous episodes there, and we've got our links to social media, and we've got our email address there. Please feel free to send us comments. Tell us what you like about the show, what you don't like. We have feelings, but we can handle it. We're tough guys, I think.
We're thick skinned. We have thick skins and even thicker heads.
Yeah.
That's a good way of saying that.
Yeah, that is a good way of saying that.
So we're on Apple Podcasts / iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on the Podbean app. We're on Google Play. We're on Spotify. We're part of the Place to Be Nation Network. What aren't we on? I think we're everywhere. We're everywhere. We're everywhere.
We're not on Pandora yet.
Oh, crap. All right, I'm going to look into that right now.
Do you think that Planet Mars has a podcast app? We could be on that. We could be like the first ones on the app.
The first ones on... we could be the first humans ever on Mars.
Yeah, we could. We could take over the market all for ourselves.
I wonder if Martians have a Tom Poston of their own who can blow up the Supermash like that.
Oh, boy.
Just an idea. Not a good idea, but just an idea.
Well, while you think of the good ideas, let's go ahead and close it out. Again, thanks ever so much for listening. Without you, there would be no us. Again, we welcome your feedback at contact@itwasathingontv.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram.
And don't forget to review us. Don't forget to like and review.
Like, review, subscribe, and share. Sharing is caring.
Give us five stars. Give us five stars, everybody.
Also, if you have a membership to Podbean, you can follow us there. I don't know what that gives you. I think it may just give you updates as to when new episodes are uploaded. But still, you can follow us there. We've got, I think we're about 14, 15 followers there. So we're slowly growing, and we thank you for helping contribute to that growth. Until next week.
Next week, we got a really good one.
Let's just say it's timely. It's very timely.
And it's a Greg episode.
Next week is a Greg episode.
No, I'm going to be taking so many notes for this episode. I'm not joking. This could literally be an hour and a half pod.
Awesome.
You've been warned. Cleaned up your devices and charge your battery. It's going to be a long episode.
Yeah.
But that's just one episode. The other episode, we sort of did some shifting because this week we were supposed to do the Saturday Night Live 6th season episode, but because of Fred Silverman's passing, we actually bumped Tom Poston up to this week. He was supposed to be taken care of next week. And next week, we moved an episode, which I think we were going to do in July. We moved that up to next week. It's one where I have a little bit of a rant. Greg knows about it.
Yeah.
I got something I got to get off my chest because it's been bothering me for years.
Yeah, this next week, the first episode is definitely a Greg episode, and the second episode is definitely a Mike episode.
It's a Mike Rants episode, so get ready for that.
But the second subject of episode two is going to be something that I think is a show that is very fondly remembered by a certain section of people.
Oh, yes. Maybe the first one, too, but we'll get into that next week. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. We will talk to you next week with two new episodes of It Was a Thing on TV. See you later.
Wow!
Whoa, what happened?
Con, you missed the entire podcast.
Oh, I missed the entire podcast? Oh, no!
I did not expect that. Oh, my gosh.
Brilliant!
That was great.
Ladies and gentlemen, Greg gets the game ball this week.
Yes,
for giving his mom a pizza and for that last thing.